Vekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Today, we're looking at a really significant book, one that's caused quite a stir, actually. It's Tim Alberta's deep dive into the politicization of American evangelical Christianity.
It really is a powerful piece of reporting. It goes way beyond just, you know, the usual political back and forth. The title itself, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory, sort of sets up the central question Alberta's grappling with.
Right. How did this movement, which traditionally emphasized, well, spiritual salvation, the kingdom of heaven, how did it get so focused on acquiring earthly power, political power, cultural dominance right here, right now?
Exactly. And it's not just an academic question, is it? It feels incredibly relevant today. You have this huge religious and political group in the U.S. where identity seems almost completely tied to winning politically. Alberta calls it a theological crisis. He argues it's threatening the very identity and, frankly, the credibility of the movement. That's why we felt it was important to unpack this for anyone trying to understand American culture and politics today.
Absolutely. And to really get the weight of the book, you need to understand who Tim Alberta is. He's a well-respected journalist, writes for The Atlantic, used to be chief political correspondent at Politico. So there's real journalistic rigor there.
But the key thing, the thing that makes this book different, is that he's an insider. He grew up evangelical. His father was a pastor in Michigan for decades.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not some outsider throwing stones. He's writing from within with a sense of, well, heartbreak, really. It comes across as a lament for something he feels has been lost.
Yeah, that personal angle is unmistakable. The book opens with this incredibly moving scene at his own father's funeral. His dad, Richard Alberta, seems to represent this older generation of pastors focused on humble service.
And yet, Alberta describes how the gathering after the funeral just got completely derailed by political arguments, conspiracy theories, culture war stuff. It just overshadowed everything.
It's this jarring moment, isn't it? Politics sort of elbowing aside grief and faith. And that really frames his whole project. What happened? What happened to the faith he grew up with, the faith of his father?
Okay, so let's dig into the main argument. What's the core thesis here? Alberta's basic assertion is that in chasing political power, the movement ended up betraying its own foundational Christian values, things like humility, compassion, integrity.
Right. The idea is that something essential was traded away.
Yeah.
If the goal became political wins, what was the cost?
Yeah.
Alberta suggests the cost was fundamentally its moral authority.
So the book traces this transformation, where the actual gospel message starts taking a backseat to a kind of nationalist ideology.
Exactly. Churches, he argues, in some cases shifted from being primarily about spiritual growth to becoming platforms for partisan politics. The focus moved from, you know, being salt and light in the world to winning the culture wars.
Yeah.
And who is he trying to reach with this? It seems like maybe two main groups.
Yeah, I think so. On one hand, you have people outside the movement who are just baffled, trying to understand how evangelical voters could embrace certain political figures, maybe overlooking character issues they once seemed to care about.
Like Donald Trump, for instance.
Right. And then on the other hand, he's speaking to people inside the evangelical world, people who are deeply troubled, seeing their own churches, maybe even their families, fractured by these political divisions.
Okay. So it's really digging into that tight relationship between white evangelical churches and the Republican Party, especially how it intensified and kind of fractured during the Trump years, using theology for political ends.
Precisely. It's about how core religious ideas got reshaped, sometimes weaponized, for political gain.
So how did this happen historically? Alberta goes back a bit, right? He talks about a shift away from maybe a healthy skepticism of worldly power.
Yeah, maintaining a kind of prophetic distance, you could say.
Towards the rise of the religious right in the 70s and 80s, that movement basically reframed political activism, making it seem like a spiritual necessity.
And that, he argues, laid the groundwork for what came later, specifically this embrace of Donald Trump. It wasn't about finding a devout leader in the traditional sense.
No, it was more transactional.
Exactly. They saw him as a fighter, a bodyguard. Alberta explores this fascinating biblical analogy they used, King Cyrus.
Ah, the pagan king who God used in the Old Testament to protect Israel?
Right. So the idea was maybe Trump isn't one of us. Maybe he doesn't share our values personally. But God can use him to protect our interests, deliver political victories like appointing conservative judges.
That's a really interesting justification. But it requires a certain kind of moral calculation, doesn't it? It means downplaying or setting aside long-held principles about personal character and virtue.
That's the core of the transaction Alberta describes. The compromise was justified by the perceived political necessity, the tangible gains.
So if that's the thinking at the national level, the King Cyrus idea, how did that filter down? How did it change things in local churches on the ground?
Well, according to Alberta, it had a profound impact. He documents how some pastors essentially became like campaign operatives. Their pulpits, their sermons started echoing partisan talking points.
So you might go to church expecting spiritual guidance and instead get, well, commentary that sounds a lot like cable news.
Pretty much. A shift from talking about eternal things to focusing on very immediate temporal political battles.
And the result.
Division. Congregations started splitting over politics. And this ties into what Alberta identifies as a deep crisis of truth within the movement. Traditional sources of authority, pastors, theologians, were sometimes sidelined in favor of political figures or media personalities.
He uses January 6th as an example, right? How conspiracy theories about the election spread so easily.
Yes. He shows how those narratives found really fertile ground in many evangelical communities, sometimes even being subtly endorsed or outright promoted from within church circles. It highlights a breakdown in discerning truth.
What's driving all this, according to Alberta? He suggests it's not really hope, but something else.
Fear. He argues it's largely driven by an intense fear, fear of losing cultural influence, fear of secularism taking over, fear of rights being eroded.
And that fear becomes a tool.
It gets weaponized. It creates this sense of victimhood that we're under attack, which then justifies more extreme political stances and demands absolute loyalty. Dissent isn't tolerated.
And that connects directly to this idea of Christian nationalism, doesn't it?
Yeah.
This blending of religious identity and national identity.
Absolutely. The book really explores that dangerous fusion of the cross and the flag, where being a good Christian and a good American, defined in a very specific political way, become almost indistinguishable.
It narrows a global faith down to a specific political project.
Right. And this leads to one of Alberta's most pointed observations, something like, the church became the chaplain to a political movement rather than the conscience of the nation.
Wow, that's a powerful reversal. Instead of challenging power, it's blessing it.
Mm-hmm. And you saw this play out starkly during the pandemic, he argues. Things like mask mandates weren't just seen as public health issues, but as attacks on freedom, as government overreach, further cementing that political identity.
But Alberta doesn't just paint a picture of decline, does he? He talks about pushback, about consequences, the reckoning and the remnant.
Yeah, he definitely highlights the cost. There's the measurable stuff declining church attendance, particularly among younger evangelicals who are just turned off by the intense politicization.
Mm.
They can't square it with the faith they were taught.
The cost of compromise, as he puts it.
Exactly. And then there are the personal stories. He profiles people who resisted, like Russell Moore, a prominent Southern Baptist leader who faced huge backlash for critiquing the political alignment.
Or just local pastors, right? Forced out of their churches for not endorsing candidates or for questioning Christian nationalism or even just for urging caution about COVID conspiracies.
Yes. These individuals, Alberta suggests, represent a kind of remnant, people trying to carve out spaces for faith that are disentangled from the political machine, focused back on the core teachings of Christianity.
Okay, so if we pull back and look at the big picture, what are the main themes, the key messages that listeners should take away from this deep dive?
Well, the absolute central one, the theological diagnosis, is what Alberta calls the idolatry of political power.
The golden calf idea.
Precisely. He's arguing that the movement, or significant parts of it, essentially elevated a political party and specific leaders to a place of ultimate importance, demanding loyalty that should only belong to God.
There's a quote or a paraphrase of his idea that really hits this. We have created a golden calf out of political power, and we are worshiping it instead of God.
Mm-hmm. It's a stark warning about misplaced worship. And a direct consequence of that, he argues, is the loss of public witness.
You know, how the movement is perceived by outsiders.
Yeah. The intense focus on political battles, the culture warring, has overshadowed the traditional Christian emphasis on things like grace, compassion, service, personal transformation.
So the public face of evangelicalism becomes associated less with, say, helping the poor, and more with political anger or judgment.
That's the danger he points to. It damages the movement's reputation and potentially pushes people away from considering the faith itself. As he puts it starkly, The gospel became a footnote to the culture war agenda.
That really subordinates the spiritual mission.
It does. And another key theme flowing from this is the crisis of truth we touched on earlier. The rejection of traditional authorities in favor of closed information loops, relying only on certain media outlets or social media influencers.
Which makes communities vulnerable to misinformation and conspiracy theories.
Exactly. It erodes the ability to engage with different perspectives or even objective facts if they challenge the group's political narrative.
So, thinking about applying these insights, what are the practical lessons here? For listeners, for communities, the book seems like a tool for discernment, maybe?
I think that's a great way to put it. It really encourages you, the listener, to be critical about where you get your information and to notice when loyalty to a political group starts demanding you compromise your core values, whatever those might be.
It's a warning against those closed information ecosystems, right? Urging us to seek out diverse perspectives.
Definitely. And for anyone involved in any kind of community organization, religious or not, it's a powerful case study. It shows the danger of letting your core mission get hijacked by the pursuit of power or political alignment.
That temptation to prioritize effectiveness or winning over integrity, it's a universal problem.
It really is. When any group tries to use political power to enforce its vision, Alberta suggests it risks corrupting both itself and the democratic process. It's a caution about the entanglement of religion and state power, specifically.
What stood out most to you personally, having gone through this material? What was surprising?
You know, for me, it was the depth of the fracture at the local level. The stories of congregations being torn apart over things that seemed, from the outside, relatively minor, like mask mandates. It just revealed how deeply political identity had replaced religious fellowship for some. And the readiness to accept conspiracy theories over trusted pastoral guidance was, well, quite jarring.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think it was the clarity of the central warning about idolatry. While the book focuses specifically on American evangelicalism, the core message feels timeless and universal. Any movement, any ideology, risks losing its soul when it decides that political ends justify compromising ethical means.
Mm-hmm. It's a powerful call to recenter on core principles, whatever your tradition.
It really forces that question. What are we truly prioritizing? Earthly power or something more transcendent?
A vital question for reflection.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acostra Foundation.